Hey guys, it's Lindsay Gensel, and you're listening to Refocused, a podcast all about ADHD. Just a reminder, the show is taking a little break to get in some much-needed R&R, and we'll be back with brand new episodes exploring all things ADHD in April. In the meantime, we're sharing some of the incredible conversations we had during our very first Refocus Together back in 2022. And of course, as always, I just want you to know I am so grateful for your continued support. Thank you so much for sticking with us during the full-blown roller coaster of a year. It has been a trip, one that has been so much better thanks to all of you. Remember, you can always connect with the show through email, hello@refocuspod.com, or on social at refocuspod and at Lindsay Gensel.
My name is Brian, and I am a food scientist. I also am a food industry consultant and the author of a book on food science, 150 Food Science Questions Answered. And yeah, right now, currently, I'm just consulting for food companies, and a lot of them are startups, a lot of them are new to the space, but I'm trying to help them get to where they need to go.
I'm your host, Lindsay Gensel, and this is a special ADHD Awareness Month series of my podcast, Refocused with Lindsay Gensel. If you're a regular listener, you know that the Refocus podcast is where we change the narrative around ADHD and share the tips and tools we need to refocus and live our best lives. We'll hear from people who were diagnosed as kids and those diagnosed well into adulthood. We'll talk about hyperfocus and distraction, stigma and shame, grief and acceptance, and so much more. And we'll see that ADHD can affect anyone, all genders, orientations, backgrounds, nationalities, and cultures. And while there are differences in how we live this truth, there are also so many similarities that bring us together in community. Be sure to subscribe to Refocus so that you don't miss a single story this month. Today's guest, Brian Lee, was clued into a potential ADHD diagnosis after his wife, a psychotherapist, gave him an ADHD questionnaire after seeing how he struggled to stay on task during the pandemic. He filled it out as honestly as possible and scored very high for ADHD tendencies. So the food scientist and author took the proper steps to make that diagnosis official. For Brian, finding out he has ADHD explained so many of the frustrating work and social tendencies he's experienced all his life. He's struggled with deadlines, motivation, and forgetfulness, and had to develop sophisticated strategies to stay on track with his academic work. Like many people with ADHD, Brian knew a normal 9-to-5 job just wasn't for him, so he created a consulting business where he helps companies in the food industry design, develop, and market their products. It has allowed him to control his own schedule and now allows him the space he needs as he learns the ins and outs of how his brain works to optimize energy and focus. Today's episode is a great conversation for anyone who has ever wanted to work for themselves, neurodivergent or not, because Brian, with the help of his wife, has created a structure and boundaries that help him thrive in his work. I was so excited when your information came through my email because a food scientist is someone, one, I've never spoken to, even outside of this project. And so it was just so exciting to find somebody who's like, yeah, I do this thing that's completely kind of new and kind of very, I want to say niche, like it's a very specific realm that you work in, and you do it with also having ADHD. And so I would love if you could just start by going back to the beginning, telling us a little bit about your own diagnosis and what led up to it.
Yeah, definitely. So basically, you know, pandemic hit, I was actually just graduating from my PhD. And so I actually did my PhD defense, which is normally in person, over Zoom. And that was a trip. But after that, you know, I had a hard time finding a job. So I had been doing consulting on the side during graduate school anyway. And I told my wife, like, hey, maybe I should just kind of jump into it and figure things out. So I did. But then I started seeing how there's some symptoms coming up of, you know, fogginess, forgetfulness. I had a really hard time multitasking. I sometimes even forget clients. That was really bad. There were definitely some moments where I was like, wow, can I really do this? Even though I was getting some traction, some success. So I think out of a whim, my wife just gave me this questionnaire and she was like, fill out this questionnaire. She didn't tell me what it was. She just was like asking me the questions. And I was like, yeah, five. And then it was like questions like, how's your attention span over time? Like, are you going to be able to focus on things? Like, are you overwhelmed? You know, do you feel like you have too much energy? So that there's these like very specific questions. And I didn't think too much of it. I thought she just pulled a questionnaire off of BuzzFeed or something. And then, you know, after she was done, she was like, hey, I think you have ADHD. And she showed me what the questionnaire was. And I was like, oh my gosh, I scored really highly on all these. And it was so funny to me because I never in 100 years thought I had ADHD. Never, right? And so I was like, okay, this is just a questionnaire. I probably am biased. You know, I'm a scientist, so I just felt like I need more evidence. So I went to the primary care. They also gave me a questionnaire. I also scored very highly on it. And they're like, maybe we should take you to a psychiatrist. You know, let me refer you to the one. And lo and behold, I sat with her and she was like, yeah, you probably have adult ADHD. And I'm like, great. And it seems like I'm of the inattentive form, which, you know, really presents itself as someone that's very just, you know, that in school, I could sit down and I could do all my work, but I was all like, if you were inside my brain, I was just all these different thoughts, but you wouldn't tell, you wouldn't even know. So I presented as someone that was, you know, fairly intelligent in the regular school system, but probably wasn't paying that much attention. Right. And then, no one caught it. No one. And it's not like I never went to, you know, the school counselor or anything like that. But they just thought I was, you know, really prone to interrupting the teacher or the professors even, right? Like I was always like, you know, I just say what was ever in my head. I just, you know, blabbered it out. Like many times I remember, you know, being reprimanded for talking in class or like saying things that are inappropriate. But I don't know if it's something because, you know, growing up as, so my background is Vietnamese. And, you know, even though I was born here in the United States, my English wasn't so, I'd struggle a little bit because my parents spoke Vietnamese to me growing up. And so I don't know if it was just like this perception that maybe, oh, there's a cultural element to it, or, you know, maybe he's got something else going on in the family. But there's this assumption that, yeah, like we're not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. But it was great because I was always a good student. So I passed very well. But then after I got that diagnosis, I was like, oh my gosh, all those times, all these different like events and experiences in my life, it was so easy to explain. Versus like for a long time, you know, I had depression for a little bit. And, you know, I struggled with socializing. And there was one time I got accepted to graduate school at Stanford, and I was so overwhelmed that I dropped out. And you know, I was reading about some of the, you know, not that, you know, everyone has their own personal life and story, but people with ADHD tend to, it appears that they struggle with certain levels of academia, and that they, you know, sometimes it just becomes overwhelming. And then, you know, there tends to be a high dropout rate, right? Like I was reading research about ADHD and sort of correlations between career and education goals and so on and so forth. you know, I just felt like a failure at that time. But I got back on the, I got back on the education pathway, and I, luckily I met my wife, who is has very high executive functioning skills. And so she helps me so much on all the other things that, just fly by my head.
It's very funny that you mentioned that, and like how amazing for you guys to kind of balance each other out. Cause I was talking with somebody else about men who are missed, who fall into the inattentive type. And it, you know, it crosses so many different generations because we just didn't know how it presented in so many different ways. But they talk about, you know, these men who use school as like their body doubling, as their structure. And then they went to college and then they met their wives and then their wives became the executive function. And then they'd go into jobs where they would have secretaries who, for the most part, it's a, you know, it's a very predominantly female heavy, quote unquote, stereotype industry. And so then they'd have these women who, even if they did have ADHD, were masking it and, you know, had great coping mechanisms.
Right.
You're just this entire structure of life. And it's not until they retire and that system's gone that they go, oh, like what was holding this up all the time?
Right. Right. No, absolutely. You know, I look back and I think about all the people that supported me in a lot of ways. And I didn't realize like they were basically, they've shielded me from, the sort of problems that I was having with this sort of, way of thinking. And, now that I know it and I understand it, my wife is like, oh, okay, that explains a lot. We're working together to help me kind of develop my own system so that I'm not always relying on her. Right. And I think that's the key bit is that, no one wants to spend their rest of their lives like supporting someone's weaknesses. So, for me, I'm learning to, it's really nice that I'm working as a consultant because I don't think I would do very well in a normal, or it would have to be a very niche specific way of doing things because I love the fact that I can do so many different things with so many different companies because I can't do a project for more than like 3 months, right? I get so bored. I get so tired of it. And it just feels so routine. And right now, like I can work between 6 to 10 clients and I'm always switching gears and it helps me. It creates its own kind of structure. It's one that I don't think a lot of people would be comfortable with because it's very chaotic and it's very hard to keep track of. But I love it because it allows me to switch, parts of my brain off and then turn other ones on. I'll do some writing or I'll do research or I'll, talk to people or I'll, run a lecture. And it's just, it allows me to keep productive without necessarily, if I was doing something that was more routine, I did an internship once for 3 months and it was the same thing over and over again. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't work. I don't know how to work. This is awful. Is this what people do?
I have been there. I feel that very much. And I'm curious, the food science, is there a part of it that's really fascinating to you? Cause it is always changing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to your point, like food science is a young field. I mean, it got started back in the 40s and 50s because after World War II, there was this need for, understanding food and there's some problems that people needed solving. And, scientists started gravitating towards that. So for me, what I really love about it is one, it pulls from so many different fields of science. There's biology, a lot of microbiology. So microorganisms, food safety, so forth. There's also chemistry, which is what I'm really good at, but I never wanted to just go down one path, right? Like I got stuck there and I was like, in the beginning of college, I was like, oh, cool. This is like a lot of fun. This is really interesting. But towards the end, I got really burnt out because I was like, oh my gosh, it's like the same thing over and over again, but like really niche, really like narrow. I was like, no thanks. So I really like the fact that I can pick up from both of those. And there's also a lot of engineering. And then there's just like the social aspect and the human aspect. Like I love talking to people, right? I have some issues with socialization, like with relationships, but that doesn't mean I don't like people. It's just that I don't have the attention span to keep track of everyone. So, but I love talking to people. I love like understanding the human condition. And I think food is one of those things that touches all of our lives, and we can, you know, there's emotions involved, there's psychology involved, there's, you know, understanding, oh, the flavor's impact on my memories and, you know, how it touched me when, you know, grandma was cooking. Like, that to me is just like a whole different aspect that I love. And, you know, I get to use science to actually get involved in that, which I don't know if you know this, but like chemists don't really have a whole lot of industry tracks. You know, a lot of them, you know, either end up in pharmaceuticals or in, you know, in petrochemicals. Those are great fields, but like I was like, oh geez, like those are very dry, and you know, there's a long, you know, you don't get to the person until like you go through a lot of different, you know, avenues through there. So yeah, for me, it's like I directly can talk to people and work with people, and it's so fascinating and a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And it's like, how amazing for you to like be so passionate about it, but also like know exactly what you want and what you don't want. Because I think that that's probably something that a lot of people with ADHD struggle with, is like, how do you pick a hyperfocus that is broad enough to satisfy you?
Oh, 100%. It was so, you know, in our society, you need a little bit of focus. Like, you can't just do everything. It was so funny that I got to be a generalist within a niche, which really saved me.
I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit about your life as a Vietnamese American and how culturally the conversations around ADHD, whether they're happening now or if they ever happened, or, you know, even just talking about feelings and talking about how your brain was working. I think it's very much across all different cultures, but I love hearing from people outside of my own little bubble about what was going on in their houses and how we talked about life. You know, we were very much like, oh, my stomach hurts, or, you know, I fell down and I hurt myself in this way. But we aren't so great at communicating what's going on in our heads. And I think that's a lot of the reasons why so many of us were diagnosed later in life, because we just assumed everyone was this way.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of perspective, because for my household, you know, Vietnamese diaspora really, you know, came out of the Vietnam War, right? So there's a lot of trauma there, and there's not a lot in our culture already. There's not a lot of talk about emotions. It's very family oriented. It's definitely there, but it's, you know, our interactions are very much trying to get by, right? And I think one of the things that kind of happened when I was growing up is there's this assumption that I was just a sensitive kid, right? But there was no like investigation on that. Like what is actually happening there? And it's understandable. Like I think my parents were very much focused on work, and they're very much, you know, striving to make it here in the United States. And so, you know, my mom was working tons and tons of hours. My dad was a doctor and my mom ran the medical clinic. They're so hyper-focused on that. And, you know, that's probably the one thing I learned from them is the ability to kind of succeed in arduous situations. But as on the emotional front, like, you know, I sometimes suspect that my dad was possibly on the spectrum. He didn't talk at all, right? And that's also a cultural aspect. Men didn't really talk about emotions. And, you know, my mom is also not very warm in that way. And so I was also just kind of growing up and not really understanding how emotions worked and making these assumptions that, okay, well, this is how things are going to be, until I met my wife, whose family is very warm and very, you know, a lot of transparency, a lot of honesty, a lot of emotional talk. And that blew my mind. I was like, wow, families are like this. Like, and I think that it became more apparent, you know, at first, I think their assumption was also like, oh, he's sensitive and, you know, he's got these cultural elements to his life. And then as soon as they started to learn more about my family and actually my extended family, who I don't know if anyone does have an ADHD diagnosis, so I don't know if I map out to anyone else, but they're like, oh, he's very different from even his family. So they could at least like exclude the cultural elements and then some of the stuff that came from my parents. And they're like, oh, he's got something else happening. Like, and then my wife finally was like, because she's a psychotherapist. So, you know, she's learning about all that. She understands all that. And she's wondering, you know, especially as she sees more and more clients in her work who do present with ADHD. I think that's what really, we finally connected the dots. And it took a lot to get to that point because you never know. Like, you don't want to offend anyone and you don't want to make assumptions. But then you realize once you understand everything about a person, you're like, oh, wait, there's something else happening in their brain. And we need to investigate that.
I love that your wife is a psychotherapist and that she's learning about this and seeing things in you, because I actually have spoken to so many people who work in that field who then realized it about themselves. And, you know, you mentioned food science is so new. Well, so is psychology, you know, like, we think it's this like deep dive, you know, go back to the philosophers, but really, like, when we look at actual documentation and facts and understanding, it's really new. And so it's so wonderful to know that, like, this next generation of people who are going to be working in the mental health field are people who are like, no, we need to understand this better. And we need to have a better understanding of how it's presenting. And we're in this realm right now of people who, because of the pandemic, are realizing what was working in life and what wasn't. And I think there are a lot of people who are like, oh, everyone has ADHD. And it's like, maybe everyone does. Maybe it's a lot bigger than we thought it was. And we've never dealt with this. You know, we've never had this moment where we go, oh, we didn't know about this, or we're learning new things. And so it's just so eye-opening to me how, had the pandemic not happened, maybe someday you would have been diagnosed. You know, maybe someday your wife would have come home and been like, hey, I've been thinking about this. Or like, maybe I would have seen, like, there would have been one meme, you know, 5 years down the line that I would have been like, oh yeah, But it's just so interesting, this one moment in time and all the things that have to happen for us to get to this point.
100%. I think what's funny, and it's, I think even to that point with the pandemic, there's so much online conversation and discussion that normally wouldn't happen. You know, you're seeing YouTube videos where, you know, we're making fun of the pandemic. And then I think my wife and I started going down the road of, because we don't usually just watch YouTube videos together. It's just that because of the pandemic, we were like, oh, we got to do something. We started going down this line of watching people with ADHD do YouTube videos and talking and making fun of, like, oh, this is how ADHD presents. And then we were like, oh my gosh, that's what you do, Brian. I'm like, it was like meeting, a new group of friends for the first time. Like, these are people I can hang out with. Like, they totally understand exactly what's going on here. And that, you know, I think that's the other piece of it, is that now we have the internet. And now we have all these conversations that we wouldn't have had 10, 20 years ago, right? And it's mind-blowing. You know, there's so many different groups and people. It would have been impossible for everyone to come together, even in a large city, right? Like, we wouldn't have known, like, who are these people, right? It's not something you go out and tell people, right? Like, oh, yeah, I forget stuff a lot, and I don't know how to regulate. Like, what is that, right?
Yeah, the emotional regulation, once I realized that, I was like, oh, yes. Yes, a lot of things start to make sense. I'd love to know, after your diagnosis, was there anything you changed immediately? And what have you been doing? And I say treatment plan wise, and I don't necessarily mean just medicine, if you are taking medicine, but what have you changed in life to address some of the things that you now know are actual struggles for you? Like, and I say actual meaning, like, if someone were to hand you a list of symptoms, like, they'd be on the list and you'd go, oh, okay, like, I want to help alleviate that.
Yeah, I think the biggest one that came out of all this was being very kind to myself in terms of my productivity, knowing that I probably will never work 9 to 5, and that's okay. Basically, I've optimized my work schedule to work for me and my energy levels. So when I get into those moments where I'm hyper-focused and I'm like prepared to literally just dive into something for 3 to 4 hours, because I know that I start to feel it now. Like I'm starting to notice the triggers of, oh, I'm in that state. I can go into that. Let's do it. And then I'll do all my work. I'll probably be like 2 or 3 times more productive than, you know, any time in the week. And then I go, okay, good. That part finished. And then now I'm going to switch gears. Tomorrow I'll just do, you know, finance stuff. Or, you know, it's these sort of realizing that it's not about time and it's not about schedules, but it's actually about what's happening in here and how to optimize that. And it's been really, for me, I'm like really impressed because I can get so much done now that I never thought I could, because I always assumed like, oh my gosh, like how can I get through 40 hours or 20 hours or whatever it is. And now I just work however I can and will. And because of, you know, the fact that I'm consulting, it's very flexible. And I'm really grateful for that, because then I can kind of get a sense of what's triggering these things. Do I need to go for a run? Do I need to eat something? Do I need to hydrate? And, you know, then it gets a lot simpler versus, oh my gosh, like I cannot focus right now. I'm going to beat my head over this wall because I'm so unproductive and being really hard on myself. Now it's just like, I could just do it. This is great. And, you know, it's been a blast. I've actually had a lot more fun with work because of that, and understanding how the rhythms work. And that, you know, I'm doubling down on a lot of things that I did before anyway, but realizing those were helping me even more. You know, I'll meditate more. I'll go for walks more. I'll talk to people when I need to, or even better is realizing that I just need to schedule all my meetings in one day. So that's what I do now is I go, well, that day is over. Like as soon as I talk to anyone, I'm like, woo, like we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna go down all these paths, and you know, nothing's really gonna get done in a sense. But you know, it's realizing that certain things or certain people bring certain things out of me, and I can use that to my advantage. Versus before, it used to be like, well, I can't talk to anyone. It's gonna be too much, and then I'm not gonna get anything done.
I have to tell you, I'm right now like trying so hard not to think about how I'm going to change my own schedule, because what you said, I was like, oh gosh, that makes a lot of sense. And that's why you have separate time. And it's so interesting that that's what you said, because I was beating myself up a couple of weeks ago. You know, I had worked an entire weekend producing a podcast. And I mean, I don't even take into account how many hours that go into editing or trying to fine tune things. And I found myself on a Monday afternoon, like relaxing and then beating myself up because everyone else that I know who works quote unquote normal hours was working. And a friend thankfully said to me, like, you don't work a normal schedule. Like, how many hours did you put in over the weekend? What time, you know, like if I can't sleep, what I do is I get up and I start working. Like, it's different for us because there's a very gray area. Our job's like never ending. It's like you may be wrapping up a project, but you're always looking at the next one, or what is exciting me now, or who do I want to work with and how am I going to pursue that? Whereas like my boyfriend, who's a boat mechanic, he's not bringing boats back to our house. I'm very grateful for that. Like he's not like rolling in this massive boat to like keep working on it after hours. Whereas me, I'm like, oh, let me just send this email. Let me do this. And I was so grateful for her saying that, because it was just like, ah, we work in a different way. And so I love that you know now, you said, what energy do people bring out of me and how do I utilize that? And in my head, I'm like, okay, reevaluating how I schedule everything. But I also feel like we are people pleasers. And so I would always say, oh, my schedule's open. What works for you? And I love the idea of being like, yeah, Tuesdays, my meeting days. This is when I'm available.
Yeah, exactly. Like just hard, like no, like, and I've set it up where I don't even get in my own way of my people pleasing. I just like, I have like a calendar that's like automated, and I'm like, Oh, I can't do anything about it.
Like, I'm so busy every other day.
Yeah, exactly.
When you look at your ADHD diagnosis and the way it's shown up in your life, and you mentioned what happened with graduate school and feeling overwhelmed, are there things that you look back and you're like, oh man, it was there and that's why this happened? And like, maybe you view some of those things in a negative light.
Yeah. Yeah. I think PhDs are weird, right? Like the whole graduate school route is probably can be really trying in the sense that, you know, you're talking about a topic, right? You choose a topic and then there's like an even smaller topic underneath that. And then like, no one knows anything about it. And you have to be so hyper-focused about like achieving your research goals and ends. And there's all this bureaucracy that's involved as well, which I wasn't aware of until I got in. And it's, and then you realize like, oh wow, this is actually a lot about managing expectations. And, you know, as much as I'd like to say, oh, it's like straightforward and, you know, you go in, you do your research, and then you leave. It was never like that. Like, it was just, there's too much chaos, even in, it was so narrow. And I looked at it, I was like, wow, I used to beat myself up saying, like, I was a terrible graduate student. Like, I was just plain not good at this, and I'm not smart enough to, even though I got my PhD, I was like, oh, well, you know, I kind of just barely passed. And now I look back and I'm like, oh, I just didn't optimize it to my own, you know, way of thinking. Because here I am as a consultant, and I'm having a blast. Like, you know, I'm talking to people and, you know, getting projects, and it's a lot of fun because, you know, it's kind of feeding that dopamine hit of like, oh, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? And I get really good at it. I got really good at it. And like, I don't know if I could have done it without, you know, this sort of way of thinking, because at some point I was given the option to take medication, and I sat down with myself and I was like, if for some reason this changes how I operate and work, is that going to be to my benefit or is that going to be a detriment? I was like, no, I love this. Like, I love randomly waking up at, you know, 2 a.m. and working till 7 or 8, and then I have my whole day. Like, that's just there. Like, I'm allowed to do that because of the way that, you know, I've fixed it up. And if I lost that and I said, oh, well, I have to like normalize this, it would be very hard to say like I feel like myself, right? Like, I've started to accept and understand it as there's definitely the benefits and there's also the weaknesses, and I just have to learn how to optimize for those.
That's really a great way to look at it. And it is so important to be having those conversations about like, what is important to you in life and how do you want to kind of protect it, and figuring out then, okay, well, what are the other options for me? And I'm curious, because you mentioned with the inattentive type that relationships have been hard. And I think that that is something that a lot of us struggle with, whether it's imposter syndrome or rejection sensitivity dysphoria, all of these things where it's obvious you're incredibly outgoing and incredibly charismatic, and you know, you can just jump into a conversation and you love talking to people, but it's like, then how do you take that to the next level? And so I'm curious if, when you look back at graduate school and some of the relationships that you were expected to develop in order to be successful, do you see some of those moments of like, oh yes, that was holding me back?
Yeah, I mean, I was really good at it in college, where I could manage relationships with people who are, you know, who are basically had authority over me because I didn't have to interact with them very much. In graduate school, you have this one professor that's like kind of dictates your entire academic career. I was terrible at managing that. Like, because, you know, sometimes I just blurt things out, and I didn't ever really have that shield where I was like, okay, this is professional and this is personal and yada, yada, yada. That was just how I functioned. And I, for a long time, I just assumed like, oh, there's something wrong with me, right? And, you know, I'm never really going to fit in into this whole, you know, experience where like you have to, you know, say the right thing and, you know, there's politics involved. And I was like, oh boy, like this is too much to even manage right now. And so like, I look back and I'm like, huh, that's an interesting situation I had. And I always felt like, gosh, I'm never going to get any references. Like no one's going to write a reference for me, you know, in order to move forward in my career. So I'm really grateful with consulting because I don't ever need references. I just go like, this is who I worked with and it's fine. And everyone's like, cool, that's awesome. And I think having the ability to have sort of a short-term relationship with people allows me to not have to necessarily manage my own way of being. And I think that's what makes friendship and family a little harder, because those things never really go away. So you just hope that people accept you for who you are. And I just gravitate towards people who are not neurotypical. Right. So they kind of understand, maybe unconsciously or from their upbringing, that, you know, things don't work out for them in terms of social setting. And it's a lot easier. You know, like I have a friend that I've known forever. He's probably my only high school friend, and I suspect that he's on the spectrum, but he's a lot of fun. He's really smart, and I really have a blast talking with him, because we both kind of come at a relationship understanding that if there's anything that, you know, in a conventional relationship, there'd be like some established rules. We don't have that because we don't have any assumptions, and it's a lot easier.
I have a friend like that too. And one of the things that we both love about each other is that we'll have plans on the books for a month. And the morning of, it's like we check back in with each other. Like, how are you feeling about today? Do you want to do it? Are we doing this? And I would say like 50-50, we reschedule or we change what we are going to do to like fit the moment. And I know I have friends who that would just never fly. Like, you've made plans, you have to stick to it. And I think that's why our relationship, we were talking about it the other day, it's like we have never had a fight ever. And I think I'm actually just realizing and having this conversation with you, it's because of that. It's because there's these undefined rules about what we both need in that moment. And like my friends who are a little bit more on like the stickler side, I'm so afraid to be like, hey, I'm not there today and I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But it's going to bug you, so I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, and I think that because there's those expectations, I think that's when the relationship deteriorates. Because you hold back, right? You hold back that part of yourself where you're like, wow, I really needed that day, or I didn't feel like 100%. But you're kind of just going along with, you know, what's expected of you. And then it becomes an obligation, right? And I feel that a lot. And, you know, over time, over the years, I've learned to sort of move past that and accept the fact that, like, I don't need to feel guilty if I forget something. The nice thing is that with my wife, she's the complete other side of the spectrum. She's like on time, like 100%, like sticks to things, communicates. And so, like, I've actually just started growing into her network. I'm like, oh good, she can do all that stuff and like sustain these like long-term relationships, and together are like good, like we come as a package, because otherwise this is not gonna work. you have to talk to her. She's the relationship coordinator.
I also have one of those in my life, so it's very interesting. I'm like always on time. I'm just like,
oh my gosh,
spot on.
Right.
I'm curious with consulting, from my understanding, is so you have clients and you set parameters on what you're going to do for them. And there's different projects and different dates for delivery, but you're also kind of setting that workload and how you're going to do it on your own. And I know a lot of people with ADHD, they really need that management. You know, the idea of working for themselves is exciting. I know I love it. But it's also hard when you are the one who's like being the stickler that has to get yourself to do it. So what have you found is working for you? Because it amazes me how just you are so confident in this role as a consultant and you love it so much. And in my head, I'm like, okay, but are you delivering things on time? Because that would be the hardest thing for me.
Yeah. No, definitely. In the beginning, it was like a big question mark where I was like, oh, can I really deal with deadlines? Like, have I ever, like, is that really, what if I pick up a really giant project and you know, I dropped the ball or something like that. And over time, I think what ended up happening was I over-delivered a lot when, and I really focused on those times where I was hyper-productive. And I, you know, and it's not like I always get things done, but, you know, I think what has happened is I've chosen clients that actually understand how I work. And that came out of a lot of trial and error. I mean, I had some really rough times where, you know, people just didn't like what I delivered. And I was like, ooh, I took that really personally. And like, I didn't. And at some point I was like, kind of like with the relationship thing, I was like, okay, well, I'm just not going to have clients like that anymore. Like I might have like a trial period where I'm actually evaluating how they operate. Right. Like I've switched the script a little bit and said, yo, if you're going to work with me, like I need to know, like, can you follow where I'm going? Because I started to realize my own worth. And when I really delivered and I saw how surprised some of my clients were, I was like, there is a superpower there, and maybe one that they haven't seen before. And I was like, wow, I can really create something that, you know, and I realized that it's not the amount of time that I spend on something. It's actually the creativity that I bring to it and the ability to connect a lot of different dots. And so I positioned myself as that person. I'm not going to be the person that I tell everyone up front, I'm the worst employee. Don't ever hire me. You know, I'm not an employee. But I am someone that can come in and, you know, if I see something, I'll tell you. I have no filter. I tell clients all the time, like, don't even expect me to be nice, right? Because I'm just going to tell you how it is. And I basically just worked in my own personality. And, you know, the clients that I lose, I'm like, okay, those are not the people that I need to work with. I need to find people who, like, love what I do, are willing to pay what I do, and really understand that, like, I'm delivering something different. It hasn't been easy. Definitely there's been, you know, dry periods in my work, but I make up for it for, like, really, really excellent, excellent clients and people who are willing to say, like, yeah, like, this guy's amazing. And, like, you know, the testimonials have been, like, through the roof. So it's a lot of filtering, and it's really understanding that I'm not a deadline person. Like, don't give me deadlines. I won't. Or if you give me deadlines, like, understand that they're soft deadlines. So I put those expectations up front. So they're very much driven by my own way of thinking and perceiving and the experiences that I've had in the past.
I love that. I had a similar realization very recently, but I love how you, like you said, you flipped the script and that you changed things. Cause like, you could have gone down the path that was expected, that you are supposed to kind of grovel for your clients and just like bend over backwards. And I love that you're like, no, that's not going to work for me. And it's not going to work for you in the way that you need me to work for you. And I think realizing that, you know, I've struggled so much with like, I don't love social media. I don't want to create TikToks. I don't want to create reels, but I think I'm supposed to because that's what's holding this market right now. And it's like, nah, I'm good. I don't need to do that. Like, but getting to that point and realizing like, okay, so maybe I'm not going to build it the way I'm expected to. I'm going to build it the way I want to, which means that it's going to be more sustainable in the end. It just might take a little bit longer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I had the same realization myself for a while. And I was actually running social media for a nonprofit back in graduate school. And I was thinking like, oh gosh, like, do I have to pivot to like my own social media? And like, do I have to do all this? And I tried it for a little bit. I was like, no, not for me. Like, I don't know how anyone does this. This is like chaos, like complete chaos. But somehow I landed on running this little subgroup on Reddit where like I don't do anything, but somehow like because of the like random conversation I have when I just feel like it, it's like this self-sustaining community where people could pitch in on their own. And that's really worked out really well where I don't have to do a whole lot, but people people are so excited about the topic, or, you know, they're willing to like come in and do the work of managing that, that I can just come in and do my thing and then leave. And that works really well. That's worked perfectly for me.
That's awesome. And it's a great reminder, like you come in when you're passionate about it and you're putting yourself in there. And like in that moment, you are so yourself and that's what people are connecting with. And then you're like, peace. Okay, I'll be back next time I'm inspired. But like, you're not coming in there just to say you did or like put stuff out there. That's not something you're really connected to.
Exactly. 100%.
I want to know, where do you see yourself thriving when you look at your life and your ADHD diagnosis and kind of the things that you do know now come in with that?
Yeah, I think just honoring it, right? Just honoring that that's me. And like, there's a story of my life that has that as part of it, and not saying it as something that I need to reject or manage or, but actually it's just, it's part of the color that is being a human. I have a background in Buddhism. So for me, it's understanding that I think that we all suffer from our own little idiosyncrasies. And this is just like another flavor of that.
Brian, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I really appreciate you coming on and being so open and honest and funny. I laughed so much. So I just thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Lindsay. I really appreciate your time. And it's been a blast talking about this. And thanks for having this platform to discuss sort of the personal nitty gritties of ADHD. And I hope that this helps someone in the future.
If you've been enjoying the podcast, I have a very small favor to ask. Could you take a moment to leave us a rating and a review? Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps other people discover the inspiration and insights that we share here. Whether it's a 5-star rating or a few kind words, every bit of support fuels our mission to empower and uplift our community. So if you found value in our conversations, please consider leaving a rating and a review today. And of course, make sure to check in with us over on social media at RefocusPod and at Lindsay Gensel. And remember, you can always connect with the show directly through email, hello@refocuspod.com. Thank you for being a part of the Refocus community. Your support keeps us going, and we're so excited for what's ahead for all of us on the other side of this much-needed break. We'll catch you all right back here in April.